Up next are our talks with Noah Lyles and his coach, Lance Brahman, when we went down to their Adidas Pure Athletics training group a couple weeks ago. We're re-releasing these as solo podcasts. If you listened to our last regular full podcast, you already heard these, but I'm putting in a couple bonus clips, actually. Noah talking to the Netflix crew, also talking about Grant Holloway not believing he would do the 4x4. Look for bonus clips in the show notes. And as always, check the show notes. And if you're hearing this podcast for the first time, usually we're breaking down the latest in the track and field world. A lot of times have interviews at the end, but hey, Noah and Lance, we didn't promote this enough last week. They deserve their own podcast. Here it is. And if you want a second podcast every week, you need to join the letsrun.com supporters club. It's the most exclusive club in running. Join today. You get a second podcast every week and savings on running shoes. Go to letsrun.com/subscribe to join today. Here's Noah Lyles. We just started rolling when he was talking about some of the young guys in the sport. Enjoy.
And the ones around, well, we can talk about
it. No, we can go.
Yeah, well,
keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the new kids around. You know, of course, you have Wewe and you have Arion, but I'm looking at the ones that we have here, you know, Jaden Slade and Udodi. Like, gosh, every time I look at Udodi, I'm like, goodness gracious, you remind me of like a younger me. I ran out of talent, but he's more talented than I was by far. But still, like, watching it. And every time I look at him, like, I'm a little hard on his form because I know that if he gets his form right, he's going to jump, like, dramatically in his times. But, again, I kind of try to remind them, like, this is going to be a process. But you have the makings to really set fire to the sport.
Yeah, see, you guys sort of mentoring these guys on the track. Like,
yeah, everybody there, the mentoring that I really try to do is in the weight room, because it's one thing to do it on the track. It's a lot easier to get the concept, but taking the concept from the weight room and relating it back to the track, that's what I always got to try to remind them of. And then they start kind of understanding why they do each thing.
So it really helps with your form on the track, or makes you
skinny? Yeah, especially the auxiliary things, like power cleans and the squats and all that. It's kind of easy. You know, you're building a bigger engine, more powerful, run faster. But when you start doing stuff like the walking lunges, and you're doing the step ups, and you're doing step ups with bands, it's just like, why are you doing all this? Like, why are we doing this a harder way? I was like, well, I want you to be able to put power down to the ground, but I also want you to throw your hips out so that you can force it down the track.
Oh,
like, so now you understand why I say you don't have to bring your knee above the parallel, but you do need to throw your hips down the track. Like, okay, that makes a little bit of sense. So, stuff like that.
So you mentioned Tobogo and Arion. I didn't prompt ever thinking about those guys. Like, do you think about other people in the sport at all? Like,
oh, of course. I like to keep my tabs on everybody, no matter what they're doing. Even if they haven't run for a while, I'm just like, okay, let me see what you're doing. All right, cool. Have fun. But it's not in a row that I feel like I'm trying to look in on everybody's secret weapon. It's more just saying, like, hey, what you up to? But, you know, sometimes they're doing pretty cool things, and sometimes they're keeping it low-key. So, you know, you get different things for everybody.
Tobogo 300 world record.
Yeah.
Does that mean anything to you?
I mean, I think it's kind of a weird situation where I already knew he was good at his endurance. That's not the thing that I believe is going to be his greatest improvement. I think his race improvement is going to be in the weight room and also in the 100. Like, the faster his 100 gets, I think the faster his overall, you know, ability is going to dramatically improve. Similar to how my career kind of is, you know. That's really where I see it. And then after watching him at Worlds, I'm like, yeah, you have the talent, obviously, and you have the ability to grow. And I think that as you get older and you get stronger and you're very purposeful with your strength, you're going to be, you know, a lot bigger of a force to be worried about.
I mean, is his top end speed almost yours?
I don't think so.
One of those Diamond League, maybe?
I haven't seen any numbers that have proven that his top end speed was higher than mine. But he definitely have put together great races. And it's a lot more consistent. So where his top end speed is very high, it's more of he is able to hit that number multiple times. So in 10-meter segments, you would see the same top end speed be very close to each other.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Indoors. Well, A+?
A+ for sure. A+ for sure. It would have been an S ranking if I got the gold, but it's definitely an S+. Yeah, I've really enjoyed indoor this season. It's my longest indoor season by far. So that was, weird in itself. And then going to World Indoors and everybody asking me like, hey, did you come here because you're trying to increase the sport? No, I'm coming here because I never got to come here before.
you didn't have the option, right?
I wasn't fast enough. I wasn't ranked at the top 5 in the 60 in the U.S. So there's no way I was going to be able to make it for the World Indoor team, and they only take top 2.
But that made the winter more interesting. I mean, obviously you did it for focusing on 100.
Yeah.
You had to compete a lot more.
I mean,
you can't do that in practice, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, one, being able to match up with your competitors in your Wicker event, it forces you into your uncomfortable zone. It's not where you would normally be. And it says, if I can do this here, then I can definitely do this outdoor. And then also, being able to run back to back, gets that confidence up constantly. And then running 360s in one day really throws in your confidence, and then throwing a 4x4 at the end. It's like, wow, okay, I am fit. I'm in shape. There's not much to really worry about.
Yeah, fuck it. You just 3 races in one day.
It's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what idea that was, but I'm not the biggest fan of it.
You sure, man. So you ran what point? How much faster in the 60 this year than last year?
1.08, I believe.
What does that mean for 100?
It means that if we add that to what I've already done in the 200, I'm running 19.10. And I believe 9.65, somewhere around there. I haven't done the math for the 100, but it would be somewhere around
there. For the Peacock documentary, those are your times, right? 9.65, 19.10, all right?
Yeah, 19.5 and 9.60. Or 19.10 and 19.60.
19.60?
Yeah. So,
what do you mean 960?
960, yes, my bad. So many nines.
Yeah. I was, Coach Lance was asking him, would you rather have a world record or gold medal?
Gold medal.
Okay, good. He's like, you better answer like this.
Yeah, it was pretty much on the same mindset. Medals last forever as long as you don't get banned. But records will always be broken.
You mentioned doping. How much of a problem do you think it is in the sport? Do you worry about it? I mean, there's such a fine line, right?
Yeah.
That's a tenth of a second.
Yeah, it's...
Testing's way better than it used to be, but...
Yeah.
I think back in the day, when your dad ran, it was like...
It was really bad.
I
mean, I don't even know if it was really bad. If it's truly gotten worse or better. Yes, I hear about bannings all the time, but the thing about drugs is it's always going to be ahead of the testing. So you first have to catch somebody who was using something new to be able to create a new test for it. So I don't know if it's how bad it really is. True, to be honest, I'm always going to assume that everybody's clean until I see something that just looks a little too fishy. But that's always mine.
I feel like distance runners sit around and talk about, I think this guy's 30. Do sprinters do that?
Sometimes it happens more when we talk about the history of the sport, especially when you talk about the top 500 times, everybody but one person has been banned on that list. Kind of sucks. And some of them weren't even banned for, what you would say true doping, but it's kind of just, unfortunate.
The problem with that is then people say, oh, you can't run that fast clean. You must be doping, right? Which I hate.
Exactly.
I hate. Radcliffe to a world record in the marathon. She ran so much faster than someone else. She has to be doping. I'm like, that's not fair.
That's not my belief.
Yeah.
And because, I got here and I'm not doping. Whether you believe that or not is up to you. But now, apparently I'm running so fast, people are saying that I sold myself to the devil, which is crazy. Unfortunately, that is a thought in the sport. It's not how I like to think most of the time. I usually take it for face value until proven otherwise.
And Bulls, do you think his times were clean?
I take it for face value. He hasn't been, you can't tell me that they were not at his door every day and that they weren't testing him every championship, because I'm getting tested every week, every championship. So I know this world record holder who's put down multiple fast times, they have been testing constantly. And you can't tell me that they still don't go back to his samples that he's probably kept for science, and they're still testing that. So I'm going to keep believing it.
And as you said, they busted whatever, many were the top five or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, the 4x4. You know, it's funny. So I posted on Let's Run, like, hey, I'm talking to Noah. What should I ask? And people are like, I sort of disregarded the 4x4. He's talking about 4x4 metas. And I thought I thought that was marketing. Now I think it's for real.
Yeah. That was the goal, to get it out of the idea of marketing and into reality. And a lot of people think, or a lot of people are upset, but they don't know that the reason you turn it into marketing is so people have some inkling of belief. So once that's out in the universe, now you go up to your coach and it's like, hey, let's try for it. Let's be able to do everything. You know, you don't got to convince Coach B about being a 400 runner very hard. He's quick to jump on that. So,
I mean, no concerns that it would mess up the 100 or 200.
Well, the good thing about it is the 4x4 is the last event.
But you got to change your training to get ready for it or anything?
Not really. I mean, I have always trained like smack dab in the 200 meter zone. So it's always given me the ability to go back and forth. I have a great 300 meter time, and I've put up splits in high school that I just ran as a professional now. And we've been focusing on the 60, the 200, and the 4x4. I mean, I told everybody after the first round at the 60, they said, how have you been preparing? I did some 200 workouts. I wasn't lying. We were doing 200 workouts. Like, the workout we did today was very similar to what I did before we went over to Glasgow. Just being able to have, I mean, I'm just an athlete. I think that's the best way to say it. I'm an athlete. I can handle all.
And you're going to do a 4x4 or 400 open four before the trials? Like, what's the plan there?
We've been thinking about it, especially since we don't want to open up in April. We're going to open up probably in May. So, you know, running a 400 at like Tom Jones or Florida Relays has been in the talks. It definitely has. But we don't know yet, because maybe this is enough. Maybe the, you know, saying that, hey, if I'm running this fast and we haven't even got to the peak of my career, you know, maybe that's enough belief for them. But all in all, no, I can't see doing too many 400s after May.
Makes sense. I mean, as a fan, I think you got to do one more. We'll do one.
I don't think it's enough. I'm not saying I'm not going to do it in May. The thing is, I planned Royal Indoor specifically because it was just high enough for people to say you would have pressure on you to run and have to run something well. And it was just rare enough to say, if we mess this up, you know, nobody's going to remember anything.
Yeah. I saw on Instagram, the NBC people, they made them predict what you're going to run.
Yeah. And
I don't think any, maybe Trevor Hardy said you run under 45 in the 45s.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say that.
I mean, he might have said 499, but everyone else is like 46. I was sort of shocked.
Yeah. Right. I was too, because
Coach, he said 45. I see him every day. And you.
Yeah. But the craziest thing is, it could have been faster, but my coach told me to come to the 200 at 21.5. So where did I come to the 200 at? 21.5. And he said, just build it from there. But if he would have told me to come through at 21.2, I would have easily just came through at 21.2 and still had the same buildup, and it just would have been a faster race.
Like, I saw you today, like, the pace, you got the pace sort of ingrained. You know what it feels like?
Actually, I don't anymore. I used to know what it felt like, but my body is just stronger. And because it's stronger, it produces times faster and easier. So like today, he told me we did a 220. He said, come through at 21.5. I did what I felt was 21.5 pace. I didn't try to push anything very hard. I tried to just work on form after I got off the turn. And I ended up running 20.5. So And that's been happening all year. So where I thought I knew pace, and I did have it ingrained in my body has changed and has become faster.
Is that a good thing, or is he mad that you're into
it? No, it's a great thing. Because if he knows that I'm able to do the whole workout at that pace and not lose anything from it and get everything he wanted, then it's working. It's working.
The socks.
Star Wars.
But it's Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
But you're the good guy, though, shouldn't?
Oh, I just like Star Wars. One, so. I have quite a few Star Wars socks, and this is one of them. I also have Chewbacca socks as well. So, yeah, those were just the ones that I saw, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to put these on.
And the car out there looks pretty nice. It looks new.
Yeah.
Is that with a new contract?
No.
Everybody's had it?
No, I got that from, when did I get that? I got that after Eugene. So I've had it for a little while now. But, yeah, I had to get rid of my other car because it could only hold two people, and it barely did that well.
What was your previous car?
It was a BMW i8. And then I got the Tahoe, which is out here because my girl drives that. And those are the two cars. That used to be me and Josephus's mileage car. We put all the mileage on the Tahoe.
That's smart. Yeah. You do so much promoting the sport, doing this. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
No, it's an honor. I saw you have a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I need to watch more of that. I know distance running like the back of my hand, and I'm involved with track every day, but I don't watch too much stuff just because my thing. But the sprint stuff I should watch because I don't know your world as much.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I actually did a podcast with Andrew of Total Running Production.
I was about to go there.
And yeah, we talked about that exact thing because a lot of forums are based around distance running. And I feel that there's just as much to talk about in the sprints. And it's always been a weird concept to me that there has just not been that much development as much as there have been forms on the distance side.
Yeah, I was about to say, for someone who wants to follow the sprints, where should they go? And also, what should we at Let's Run do to help cover the sprints better? Maybe we should have a sprint separate forum or something.
I've truly been thinking the same thing, that there pretty much should be a sprint separate forum because what has kind of happened is they've gone to Twitter. Twitter's Twitter. I'm just going to leave it at that. But having a better place for people to share information, I feel would be a lot easier and a lot more fun. But I'd say Justin Gatlin recently has been starting his own podcast, and I've been listening to it quite often, and it's really good because they don't just talk about times and people winning. They talk about the mental states, and they talk about the overall bigger picture at times. And I think it's very important for people to hear that, because just like how I got myself into the flare, that took a lot of planning and a lot of politics. And I think that a lot of sprinters just believe as long as you win battles, everything will come to you. And that's not always how it happens.
Wait, so it did take politics to get on the team?
There's just politics in anything. Yeah. I have to ask. But asking is politics.
Oh, yes.
Knowing to ask the right person, that's politics. Knowing to say, I'm going to show up every day that you guys are warming up is politics. Saying that even if you don't choose me, I'm going to warm up with you and I'll be here just in case everybody else gets hurt at one moment. If there's a freak accident, I'll be here. I'll be ready for you. That's politics.
There you go. I need to listen to the Gatlin podcast.
Yeah.
Because even the Otto Rosen thing on Instagram, I was trying to listen to it. I had to pull it up on Instagram. I was driving yesterday. I'm like, this should be a podcast.
Yeah, it should. It should have been. Because we've done a few of them, but I feel that they should be a little maybe a recorded Zoom session. But yes, you better listen to Justin. He's doing it with a coach. I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Green. And he's, coaching a few professional athletes in the local area. But they know the sport and they know the history. And it's very nice to hear. It's very refreshing to hear.
All right, real quick, the rivalry, like Fred, Christian, any Tobago? I don't know, people like...
I feel that this Christian and me rivalry it's been one of the longest. Of course, there's me and Michael Norman in the 200, but, of course, he has to run the 4. But this me and Christian rivalry has been doing really well. I was talking to the NBC guys, and they were telling me that this was some of the biggest numbers they've seen in the past, like since the Olympics. They said 2 million people watched Albuquerque just for the 60. And when I hear that, I get elated because now I'm like, there's something here. We can capitalize on it. So
yeah, that's why they should have put Will Indoors on NBC. So.
That's another story for that's completely different person's issue. Yeah, that's less NBC and different topic.
Man, so I don't need that one. Thank you. Man.
Here's bonus clip number one, where the Netflix crew ask Noah about who he's worried about in 100 this year.
Who are you looking at in 100 this year? Who's on the
radar? After the 60, nobody. after what I ran in the 60, I'm just focused on me now. I already got everybody's got me as their target now because I'm the champ. Yeah, and I'm planning on doing things that nobody's seen before. So. Ain't no reason looking backwards. I'm only looking forward.
Is that kind of indoor season give you a big confidence boost?
Humongous confidence boost. Humongous. Yeah. You can't even imagine.
Here's bonus clip number two. Noah's bragging how his claim to fame was he beat Grant Holloway in a high jump once in high school. Then he goes into how at World Indoors, Grant really didn't believe Noah when Noah told him he was going to run the 4x4.
You know, he didn't believe me when I said I was running the 4x2. I mean, the 4x4. He didn't. Like, I'm literally, like, dressed, and he's like, yo, we got to go out tonight. I'm running the 4x4. No, you not. Yes, I am. Like, stop playing with me. I'm serious. Dead serious? I'm dead serious. Man, forget you. Didn't believe me. We at the track. I am warming up for the 4x4. What are you doing? I'm getting ready for the 4x4. Didn't believe me. Didn't believe me until you saw me put on the uniform.
That was funny. Yeah,
I think he wants the 4x1 more than 4x4.
Up next is Lance Brahman. That's Noah Lyles' coach and the head coach of the Adidas Pure Athletics Group. They've currently got 12 athletes. In addition to Lyles, Wade Van Niekerk is in the group. So currently they have the number one 100, 200, and 400 meter runners in the world. Lance in the past coached Tyson Gay to the double in 2007. He coached Veronica Campbell Brown, Shawnee Miller Weibo, amongst others. Oh yeah, when we recorded with Lance, it was like a wind tunnel. We ran it through some software to get rid of the wind. It did an amazing job. But a couple points, you can't hear anything if we removed the wind, so you'll hear some wind, but it lasts a couple seconds and then it's back to sounding pretty good. Enjoy.
All right, Noah Lyles. About Noah first.
Sure.
Indoor season?
Great.
A+?
Yeah, A+. Everything we wanted out of it, maybe even a little bit more. So, yeah, just was part of the plan this year to get a few wins and keep looking out in the first part of the race. Things we're doing are working. I'm very happy with it. And, you know, we're ready to move on to outdoors now.
And outdoors, the goal is?
To make the team in 100, 200 meters.
And Noah talks about this. Well, 4x1 will come. What about the 4x4?
Man, I don't coach the American relays. It's none of my business. It's they have to choose who they're putting on the things. That has nothing to do with it.
And indoors, perhaps controversy is the right word, but some people are like, oh, no, I shouldn't have been on the team. Like, any thoughts on that? Like, how that came about?
No, it's, like I said, it's, you know, how it originated was is that I said, hey, if they end up needing a leg coach, I can run it. I was like, if they need a leg, sure, why not? And then they decided that they thought that they could use him. And so I asked him, and he said, yeah, I'll run it. And it fits in with what we're doing training right now. So I was totally okay with it.
Yeah, did you have, if I'd asked you beforehand what he'd split, what would you have guessed?
I assumed he'd split somewhere in 45s.
Yeah, I'm sort of surprised because the NPC guys, they did something on social media. Like, I don't know, they were saying 46 something. So he ran great. Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have the benefit of coaching a guy every day, so I kind of know what kind of shape he's in. So it wouldn't have been a fair guess if I'd have gave one before him. But yeah, I see him run every day, and I know what we're doing, and that's where he was capable of going, was somewhere in the 45s, and that's what he did. So yeah, all great.
And
outdoors, I can't believe I'm talking about the 400, but if he wants to run the 4x4, I assume we'll have to run at least a few relays or an open four. Is there going to be any of that in there?
The only thing we're worried about right this very minute are trying to make the team into 100 and 200 meters. Besides that, it's irrelevant.
100 meters. You guys did it. 100 gold, 200 gold last year.
Sure.
Now Noah's 0.1 something faster than the 60. How much faster?
Somewhere in that range. I mean, 0.08 or whatever, but somewhere in that range. Sure.
What do you think that means for the 100?
You know, we're working on the part of the race that he needed the most work on. And, you know, if he's with those guys at 60 meters, he's pretty good to last 40. So, you know, it's going to be hard to hold him off. But at the same time, you know, there's a bunch of really good guys in this country. There's a bunch of really good guys in the world. So they're all trying to step up their game too. And, you know, that's what I have at trials.
In our sport, especially in sprinting, you can't really control what somebody else does, right?
Nope. It's a non-contact sport. So the only thing you can control is what's in your lane.
And a lot of the guys, you know, posturing at the start, does your start influence somebody else? Like how much can you impact somebody else?
Depends on the person, depends on the environment. I mean, some guys are easily intimidated, some guys aren't. Some guys can get in their own little world and that's where they need to be. So at the end of the day, you can only take care of what you can control, and all you can control is your lane. And, you know, the hardest part about the 100 meters is understanding that, you know, you have to do what you do best. And at the end of the day, is it going to be good enough to be the first guy at the 100 meter line? You know, everybody has their strengths. Everybody has their weaknesses. Everybody has things that they're working on. But, you know, you hear, oh, well, the star spit. Star doesn't matter if you're the first one to the line. You know, it's about putting together an entire race, and there's three segments to that. And, you know, it's the guy that puts together the best three segments overall that generally wins.
Obviously, last year, Noah raised the game a bit in 100. People act like that was new. In 2018, he was U.S. champion. It's an off year. 2019, Diamond League champ, I think. He's run 9.8 before 2018 and 19, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the world junior champion.
Last year, obviously, he didn't run the 100 of worlds before, but like, his times weren't that much faster. Was he just more consistent? You were more confident in him every time out? Like, what was the difference? Noah's a 100-meter runner now, or after this indoors, it may be even better, but how would you say 2023 Noah versus 2019 Noah and the 100? What's different?
Well, I mean, he's more mature. He's gotten stronger, but at the end of the day, sprinters sprint. And, you know, the way I train sprinters and how I always train them is, you know, you have to have the ability to run both events, one and two. You know, 19 was about his first world championship. He'd never been to one, so we went there, lined up for the race he was the best at the time to see if he could, you know. So 2020, we were going to run more hundreds, and he had a pandemic. 21, the plan was to run more hundreds, but he was dinged up most of the year. He was just, you know, getting fit by trials that year. So, you know, he ran some hundreds, but it was more so to get ready for the two. And then, you know, he's fortunate enough to still get a bronze medal at the Olympics, which was awesome. They ran really fast at Prefontaine. So that was a good year. And then in 21, it was the focus was on trying to become the world champion again in the 200. The training was going really well. And we thought that he might have a shot at running, you know, in that 19.4, 19.3 range, and just put the emphasis towards it. And then in 23, because 24, the goal all along was to be the first, was to be at Olympics that you tried both one and two. So we went ahead and did the work last year so that he get an idea of what that was going to feel like.
Once Noah can run 100 at the level he's at now, is doing a double much harder? Obviously, Lee Bolt was crazy good, but he won three Olympics. Tyson Gay won, pulled the double. Are you risking something by attempting the double?
I'll just go back to my same statement, sprint or sprint. If you're good enough and you have the ability to do both sprints, you do both sprints. You know, in this sport, to be considered one of the best of all times, you have to do special things. And part of doing special things are running a couple of events at an Olympic Games. So that's the type of athlete he is. And, you know, the emphasis right now is just trying to make the team at both. And if that happens, then we'll turn the switch and get ready for Paris if we're fortunate enough to be
it. It's kind of crazy. There's no room for error in the U.S.?
Zero.
I mean,
the Olympic trials, it's probably every 4 years the hardest meet in the world.
Are you more relaxed at the Olympics than the Olympic trials?
That's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot more on the line at the Olympic trials. because you have to make the team and you don't have a choice there. You have to be ready that day. So I'd say that from a nerve standpoint, sure, I think the Olympic trials are a little bit more nervous, but you know, the Olympic Games still brings its own interesting parts of the sport. So the idea is to do everything you need to do throughout a year to be ready for both if you're fortunate enough to be there.
And Mike Marsh is here today, like he's taping off something on the track. Like, what's
He just happened to be in town and he's trying to do some algorithmic formula with, I can't even say the word, some formula with their start marks and so forth. So he just wanted them to measure it off so that he could put it into his formula and try to come up with some ideas as they get closer and closer to that time of year. But it's
so that tape a lot of people they'll use down the road or something for something.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to do with a lot of people because you don't know who's going to be on the team.
Noah's got the Netflix crew. We're here all day today. He's big into promoting the sport. Does that motivate him, or do you think sometimes are you worried, that's going to get away from him just focusing on what's important?
You know, everybody's different, and, you know, this type of stuff does motivate him. He enjoys it. And as long as it's productive to his training, I'm totally fine with it. If it starts affecting training, then we cut it out. And me and him have a good enough relationship, we can have those conversations. And when it starts to get too much, I just simply let his management know and they cut it out.
Makes sense. The 100 meters is sort of like the heavyweight boxing in the sport. There's rivalry a little bit. You know, sometimes I'm more posturing than not, but do you get caught up in that? Do you assess, Tobogo's doing this, Curly's doing this, we got to up our game? Or like, do you think about the other guys at all?
From my standpoint, no, not really, because we still have to do the things we need to do for him to run as fast as he can run. At the end of the day, it comes down to that. As far as the rivalries and the posturing and all that type of stuff, hey, whatever gets all these guys running fast, I'm all for. Because the faster the other guys run, the faster he's going to run. And that's when special things happen. I mean, you got a lot of guys running fast when both of us run fast. They were times he was, but, you know, 980 doesn't even get a medal in London. So, you know, when somebody steps it up, and everybody does, and it's great for us.
It's funny you said that, because in researching this, I guess you would know more than any. I'm like, Tyson Gay ran 980 and didn't medal. Right. He ran 971 and got smoked. I mean, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's still fast as hell, though.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Getting to coach at this level, like, your dad's a great coach, right? He doesn't get to do this.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, something you appreciate every day, like, sort of?
Yeah, I mean, I do it. Sure. I mean, you know, I was fortunate enough to find something I wanted to do, and it was that I'd probably do for free, but I'm fortunate enough that I could do it and get paid for it. So, yeah, this is what I love to do, and this is what I'm made to do, and you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to do it.
And then bringing in athletes to the group, is it sort of like a joint deal with Adidas, or do you recruit them, or Adidas says, hey, I got this guy for you? Like, how do you guys determine who comes in the group, who's a good fit?
Yeah, it's nobody has to come here. It's an available spot if they want to do something different from what they did before. You know, nobody's made to come, and I don't take everybody that wants to come. You know, you have to fit in with what I think is important to be a great athlete. You know, you have to fit into the system. You have to fit into the people that are already in the group. So, you know, I think, and I've always thought that if you look at the history of the sport, the best sprint programs came from groups. Best sprinters come from groups. They train in groups because it keeps you accountable and it gives you a good litmus test on the days you don't really feel like getting something done. You look out there and some of the people you're going to be competing against on a daily basis are out there getting it done. You have a tendency to jump right in and keep going. So it's I get tired of the adage, but, you know, iron sharpens iron. I mean, it's a good chance to see where you're at on a daily basis and get you ready for big competitions. And it also puts you in a position that, you know, you see somebody that's supposed to be really good. Well, you train with those types of guys every day. They don't intimidate you.
Yeah. And is there, the guys in the group can motivate you sort of, but then there's also, you know, other groups. Is there rivalries between the groups, between you and other coaches? Or is that more at the athlete level, you'd say?
Yeah, I don't see it that way. I mean, everybody's got their group that they're trying to train. And, you know, if that gets people motivated to train hard, I'm sure people use it, but it's not really anything that I get caught up in. You know, I can only worry about the people that I train. I can't, I don't, don't know, maybe I'm not smart enough or have enough time to worry about other people, but I don't. I just, you know, the ones that want to come here and train hard, come here and train hard. And if they've been here and decide they want to do something else, they're free to go somewhere else and try it. And, you know, it's truly a situation that at the end of the day, I like people watching people run fast, whether they're in my group or not, but I prefer it to be the people in my group.
This level, it's amazing what the body can do, right? Boom, boom. That's probably a tenth of a second.
Yeah, just leave, yeah.
I mean, that's, you're good, you're not good. Like,
it's a tenth of a second. It's hard to stop on a stop.
Yeah, you can't do it. I was trying to do it on my thing to see the other day, and I couldn't do it.
Not every time, but yeah. It's tough.
9 out of 10 times you line them up, Noah Lyles will beat somebody. There's no room for error. Like, how do you, I guess, what separates Noah Lyles from the guy 0.2 behind him?
Yeah. You know, everybody at this level is very talented, or you wouldn't be at this level.
Right.
But at the same time, not everybody has the same talent level. You know, you have to have a special talent to do special things. And with that, you have to have this right mindset to continue to work on the things you need to do to get better and not be complacent on the fact that you just have talent. Because like I said, everybody at this level has talent. You know, what stands out, and I've had some people run really, really fast in my career, you know, that I've been fortunate enough to be in a, you know, relationship with as far as coach athlete. But, you know, the one thing that most of those all had in common were the fact that they weren't complacent on just being good. They wanted to be great. And it was more of an internal drive than it was external, meaning, you know, they'd run out here to Claremont meet for free if it's going to get them better. You know, so.
And that is a crazy thing with our sport, right?
Yeah.
Well, they'll meet here with 100 people, and then they'll go to the Diamond League. And it needs to get back.
Six of the same 8 guys. Yeah. It's just more that they should get paid, and it's important that they're professional athletes. And I think that in our sport, people forget that because the federations are so involved at major championships and so forth. But on a daily basis, I mean, this is how these guys make their money and feed their family and everything else.
And I mean, having coached 2 double world champions, do you ever compare like Noah to Tyson? Like,
I try not to compare any of them to one another. I mean, there's similarities in certain things, but when I start looking at similarities, it's not person to person. It's more just the math, you know, okay, we're doing this workout and we ran it this time comparatively to where Tyson was at that time back then. I'll look at it because it'll be some similar as far as workout goes, but it's more of just a, I don't know if the right word's a litmus test of where we're at in training, but it gives me a good idea of, okay, well, this is where we're at and this is what we're doing. You know, I think that, yeah, I personally right now, you know, if things keep going the way they're going for this year, Noah's showing that, I mean, he could be a 9.7 low, 9.6 high guy just based off of his times and the math that we're using for workouts and everything else. And, you know, will he run that fast? I don't know. We'll see. But that's the type of athlete he is.
What does that equate for the 200?
Well, you know, if he gets that much better in 100, which is about a percent, then you get a percent better in the 2. If everything's equal and, you know, maybe you can run the world record, you know, 1915, 1912, somewhere in that range based off the same math, if I'm using it correctly. And, you know, will he do that? Now, that's hard to say. I mean, when you start talking that fast, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of intangibles that you can't control. Weather, time of year, environment, you know, how tired are you from running, you know, 3 races before you get to that, and which is 5 when you get to the final. And, you know, there's a lot involved. But, you know, I don't talk about world records. It's not how I'm made. I think the world records happen when special things are all lined up at the right time. And the better the world record gets, the harder it is to achieve. So, you know, right now, the only goal for me, for him or anybody else in my group is to make the team. And once they make the team, then we'll worry about what happens at the Olympics. And if they are fortunate enough to be at the Olympics, then we're trying to medal. And if you medal, we're trying to win. And if you win, that's all that really matters, because once you're an Olympic champion, you're always an Olympic champion. And I know.
And I guess I made you pick. You'd rather have a gold medal than a world record?
Yeah, 100% every single day.
Think Noah's the same way?
I hope so. But I think that we think similar in that era. But, I mean, world records are great, but it's not what this sport should be about. The sport's competition, the sport's running against the other guys in the race, but still taking care of what you can control. And any time a world record happens, it should be special, because it's hard, but you can't plan for it. You can't train for it. You train to win races. I mean, that's what this is when you win races, fast times come.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a coincidence that the world records are set at either Olympic Games or World Championships.
Yeah. Like, I mean, all the bolt ones were, right?
Yeah, they're ready to go. You're ready to go. And
I mean, you have stars in the right time, and the weather has to be right, and you have to be in the best shape of your life. And I mean,
I was watching the Peacock thing, and Noah was talking about the world record in Jamaica. I'm like, no, like, I don't know if that was for the cameras or what, but like, maybe with the weather or something. Actually, Bo broke the record at that Grand Prix in New York. I was there. It rained that day.
Yeah, it was a special
day. And I almost didn't go. Yeah. I was like, oh, it rained away.
Yeah, I mean, it was a special day. It just rained. And
yeah.
The atmosphere was right.
There's something weird with the rain, right? Was right after the rain.
Barometric pressure dropped, so the air's a little thinner.
I guess fine lines in the sport. Doping. The whole doping thing is crazy. Like, I feel like distance runners, we get together, we talk about, like, oh, so-and-so, this, such and such. But, like, as we said, like, boom, boom. Like, how big of a problem do you think doping is now in the sport? Like, testing's crazy, much better than it was, like, when I was around in the 2000s. Like, sure.
I mean, you know, people are going to do what people do. All I can control is my thought process on it, which I don't believe in it, never have. I think that the most talented individual, God-given ability with the right training and the right work ethic and all that type of stuff should be the guy that wins the race. I don't believe in shortcuts. So I don't believe in any of that. So that's my philosophy. I try to ingrain that in the people that I train. You know, people make mistakes over time. Some of them are accidental. Some of them are purposeful. Who knows at the end of the day? But all I can do is speak on a regular day about my philosophy with the thought when it comes to that. And I just don't believe in it.
Yeah, what happened to Tyson? I don't know if he's with you, but he's with Drummond. Like, what happened with that whole situation?
Yes. That's Tyson's story. I don't talk about other people's stories. All I know is that, you know, it wasn't something that it was a very surprising situation. But besides that, that's his story. He can tell it as he wants.
I saw you hitting golf balls. You're a big Auburn fan, but then you got two daughters. Like, outside of track, what are your...
I'm a regular dude. I mean, that's the thing about this sport is that, you know, in this country, it's a huge participation sport. But it's not huge on a professional level. So, you know, the best part about what I do and especially being here in Claremont and everything else is that my neighbors don't even know what I do really for a living.
That's a different guy.
Well, how can you live here and you coach age group track? I don't know. I guess I'm good at it. I don't.
Really?
This works. Oh, yeah. Nobody really understands how this works. And I'm fine with that. I mean, whether it's good or bad or indifferent, you know, I tend to live my life in boxes of, you know, family time and track time. And, you know, I'll go play golf. I'll go fishing. I'll lift weights. I do other things. Just that's trying to keep myself as centered as possible because of, you know, just like anything else, if you get too enthralled in it, it ends up being a detriment more so than a benefit. And I think that you need to be able to take your mind, go different places and, you know, live as much of a normal life as possible. And the same thing for these guys. I mean, it gets hectic. You go to Europe and you got all these people asking for autographs or, you know, the USA championships, but we're in Claremont. Noah, what goes to Panera Bread and gets a sandwich and he just lives a normal life here. I think Tyson was the same way and Veronica and Shanae and Tori and
nobody bugs him.
Nobody bugs him. And that's the best part about being here.
All right, good. Appreciate it.
No worries.
A big thank you to Lance and Noah for letting us observe their training for a day. To everyone else in the group, we've got some more interviews as well. Big thank you to Global Athletics for setting it up. And if you enjoyed this, well, first of all, we hope you're a Let'sRun.com fan checking it out every day. But if you want to take your Let'sRun.com fandom to the next level, you need to be a Supporters Club member. You'll get a second podcast every week, a bonus podcast only for Supporters Club members. You get a super soft t-shirt, savings and running shoes. Join today, letsrun.com/subscribe. If you use code CLUB25, you'll save 25% off your first year.